Begin the current daf Maseches Gittin daf Nun Ches. Begin on the bottom of daf Nun Zayin Amud Beis, on the bottom line, where the Gemara continues the referring to the third of the three incidents of the Churban by the times of the Churban Beis Hamikdash, again, which are illustrating the pasuk of Asha Ad Mefachid Tamid, but someone that's not will fall into evil, which were the Jews were overly confident. The last one being that the people of Beitar, because of what they had done, which was regarding the daughter of the Caesar, which is the side of a carriage. So the city of Beitar was destroyed. So the Gemara concludes this discussion by saying that Amar Rabba b'chon Amar b'yichna, he says, Arboim saw, there was a measurement of 40 saw, as we continue atab of Nenches Menaf, of Ketsutze Tefillin, which are just the casings, the boxes of the Tefillin, which is the black boxes, besides the straps that connect to the Tefillin, were Nimtzu b'reishi haruge Beitar, were found on the heads of those who were killed, murdered, in Beitar, meaning there was a lot of people that were killed. That's how much tefillin was there. Rabbi Yehuda ben Shmuel Amar, he argues, he says, no, it's sholish kupis. So actually three boxes. Shal arbam arbam saw, that each one had 40 saw. So 40 times 3, there was 120 saw. Not like the way Rabbi Bechana had said that it was 40 saw. There was actually 120 saw of the boxes of tefillin. But Masnititan in the Braisa was taught, similar to this second version, but different, was arbam kupis. Actually it was 40 boxes. Which each box contained three saw of the tefillin boxes. So you had these boxes containing the tefillin. So the second two versions say that it was 120 saw, and the first version said that it was 40 saw. So the Gemara actually says, actually, that's not a machlekes. Ha, the last two interpretations that said that it was 120 saw of how many tefillin boxes there were, again, meaning the tefillin themselves that has inside the parashias, was Dereisha. That was a reference to the head film. There's two pairs of tefillin. There's two parts to it. There's the tefillin shel yad and tefillin shel roish. So the tefillin shel roish are large. There's four batim. There's four casings in every single ketzitz, in every single tefillin box itself. There's four different compartments because the parshis are separate. So those tefillin shel roish are three times the size as the tefillin shel yad. So although that the Tefillin Shel Yad was 40 saw, the Tefillin Shel Reish was 120 saw, which Rashi asked them, if it's 4 to 1, shouldn't it be 4 times the size? So Rashi says no, because the one bias that there is, the one containment that there is in the Tefillin Shel Yad, is bigger than each bias that's in the Reish. Because by the Reish, you have to fit 4 parishes in each individual one, and the Shel Yad, you have to fit 4 into that one. So therefore, the tefillin shel roish is larger because you have to fit in four different compartments and you have to have space between them. So therefore it's going to be larger, but each one of them is not as large as the tefillin shel yad, which has all four in that one. So therefore it's three times the size, not four times the size. So that's why there was 120 saw, whereas ha, the first version that said it was 40 saw was the dar, was the tefillin shel yad. So there's no disagreement, it's the same amount of people that had the tefillin when they were killed. The only question is that how many saw was it? It's going to be the same amount. For that 40 saw of the tefillin shel yad that they had, is going to be three times the size. That's how much the volume is going to be for the tefillin shel roish, because it's much larger, that it has to have the four different separate parshias and compartments inside the tefillin shel roish. Continuing on this theme of the Churban Beis HaMikdash, Gemara tells us, Omer Ba'asi says, Arbo kavin moyach, there was 4 kav, a certain measurement of brain, nimtzu al evan achas, was found on one stone in the times of the Churban Bayis Rishon, by the first Beis HaMikdash destruction. Ulam, he says it was tisha kav, and there's actually 9 kav, that much measurement of brain that was found there. Amrav Kahana, v'itim shil b'amor, he says micro. What's a pasuk that illustrates this idea? As it says a pasuk in Tehillim, it says, Baz Bavel Hashaduda, the daughter of Bavel of Babylon, which is violated, Ashri Shisham Loch Begoimah. Praiseworthy is he who will take revenge from you, will pay you back, like the pasuk that continues, Begoimah, etc., as Gemulech, the payment, Shegemal Talon, which you have done for us, the Jewish people. Ashri Sheyech is praiseworthy is he who holds on, the Nipetz Es Olalayach Alasola, and he will crash your children into the rock. Again, that's exactly as we see, that's what happened to the Jewish people, that their heads were smashed on the rocks and was brain, that much measurement, on the rock. I think we're continues with the Pasuk in Eicha, talking about the Churban Bayis Sheni. It says in the Pasuk, B'nei Tzin Hayikarim, the precious children of Tzion hamsuloim bapaz, which is praised in their jewels. Now, maimim suloim bapaz, what does it mean that they were praised in their jewels? Paz is precious diamonds. If you think that what the Jewish people were praised with was because they were covered in this paz, in this jewelry, but he actually says that tarti maskele istire, there were two weights of slime, which is a certain measurement, of pizza, of this paz, that was noches ba'am that came down to the world. Chod b'raymi. Toman here at the second base of Middash, it was Rome that was destroying the Jewish people. Actually, one half of all that paz was in Rome. V'chod b'kuliyam, and the other half is in the other, throughout the world. So you can't say the Jewish people were misaloyim ba'paz, that they were covered with this paz, because actually Rome has more. Ella shall you meganen esa paz b'yayfin. Rather, what the pasuk is saying is that they embarrassed the beauty of paz with their own beauty. That's what misaloy means from the term of soilu, which means a term of praising, which means to say that their beauty was praised as diminishing almost this pause, saying that you're nothing compared to the beauty of the Jewish people. As the Gemara illustrates, Mekara, originally, Chashiva de Remoi, the nobleman of Rome, Havanakti Bilgayna de Kushpanka, they would take beautiful images on their signet ring, and they would have it in front of them when they would cohabit with their wives, so that they should impregnate when they're viewing that visual, because the visual it makes an impression, and it actually makes the difference regarding the child that's conceived. But Mekam ve'elach, after they had taken the Jewish children as in captivities, Maisi b'nei Yisrael, they actually would take the Jewish children, the astra b'kari de parayu mishamshan, they would tie them at the foot of their bed and cohabit facing and seeing the Jewish children. Now, Amalei Chad L'Chavri, one of these Jewish children said to the other one, Ha'hechik Siva, where does it say this in the Torah, that such a thing is going to happen to us, that we're going to be tied to the bed of the Romans, and they're going to cohabit facing us? So Amalei, so his friend said to him, it says a pasuk in Devarim, in the Teichacha of the rebuke, where it talks about all the punishments that's going to befall the Jewish people when they don't keep the Torah. It says, Gam kol choli b'chol maka, and also all illness and all punishment, which is not even written in the Sefer Torah, that's going to befall the Jewish people. That's what he's saying, that this wasn't even written in the Torah. You're right, even those things which are unfathomable is going to happen to us like this. So Amma, the other one said, Kama marchikna miduch de plan. How far is that pasuk from where we're up to? Because I didn't get up to that pasuk yet that tells the answer for this thing that you just told me. So Amalei, so his friend said to him, Ingid, it's a little bit further. It's Pusto Palga. It's a page and a half, a column and a half later from where you're up to, is where this pasuk is, which says this. So Amalei, his friend, said to him, Imatoy legabe, had I got up to that pasuk, lo yitzruch loch, I wouldn't need you. In other words, I would have known from that pasuk myself, where do we see this punishment that's happening to us from the pasuk that you just told me. Moreover, the pasuk said, the Gemara says, Amar Yehuda Meshmul Meshum Mepshim Begamliel. Ma'idach said, what does it mean, a different pasuk in Eicha? Eini oilo lo lanafshi, my eyes are grieving for my soul, mikol b'nais iri, from all the daughters of my city. So he says it's a reference to the following thing. Arba meis batik in the sea is hoyi b'krach beta. As we were mentioning before, that was the third of the three references that the Gemara was basing this whole Gemara Nezakin, which is again commonly learned on Tisha B'Av, which talks about the Chorban Beis HaMikdash, which was the destruction of Beta. So there was 400 shuls in the city of Beta, and in every single one of those 400 shuls, there was 400 teachers of children. And in front of each one of these 400 teachers, there were 400 children learning from that teacher. Now, when the enemy would come into the shul, so the students would just stick them with their sticks, because there were so many children with their sticks, they would chase out the enemy. But the enemy overpowered and captured them, then they wrapped them in their books and they burnt them in the fire. The Torah Ban Rulun Nabraisa, there was an incident with Reb Shu Ben Chananya. Shahalach Lekrach Gadol Shabarim, he went to a great city in Rome. Amrulay, they said to him, Tinek Echad Yesh Bebeis Asurim, there is a child in jail that's Yefei Enayim B'Tov Ra'i, beautiful eyes, beautiful appearance, and his locks, his hair, is organized in curls. Really beautiful child. So he went and he stood by the entryway of the jail. And he quoted the following pasuk in Yeshayah. He says, who gives the Jewish people Yaakov to the spoils, the Yisrael advises him, and the Jewish people for plunderers. So Ana Oisei Tinik V'Amar. So that child answered, and he said, quoting the end of that pasuk, Haloi Hashem Zu. Behold, it is Hashem, because Chatanu Lo, we have sinned to him. V'Loi Avu B'Drach of Halach, and they didn't desire his path and to go in. V'Loi Shama B'Taras, and they didn't listen to his Torah. So Amar, so Rebishuv Ben Chananya, when he heard this, said, Muftachani Boy, I'm confident about this child. Shemayr HaRab Yisrael, he will one day be a leader, a teacher of the Jewish people. Havayda, he swore, I'm going to, by the service, She'eni Zazmikan, I will not move from here, Ad Shevdenu B'chal Moment Shepayiskan Lav, until they, I will redeem him, no matter what amount of money they ask from me. Amru, they said, Alei Zazmisham, Ad Shepadoy, Mamam and Harba, he didn't leave from that spot, until he redeemed him with a large amount of money. And V'lohayya Ma'admi, you're right, it wasn't long before Ad Shehayru HaRab Yisrael, until he was already teaching the Jewish people the ways of Hashem. Umanan, who was this child? Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha. Not related to Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha, obviously much later. The Gemara tells the Amram Yehuda Merav. There was a story with the son and daughter of Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha, Shenishbu l'shnei adonim, who was taken into captivity by two different masters. Now, l'yamim nizdavgu shneim b'makam echad. It happened that these two different masters met each other in one place. Zeh oimah, this master was bragging. He says, Yeshli eved, She'en ki yafi b'cholayim. You know, I have a slave that there's no one more beautiful than this slave. V'zeh, man, this one says, wow, yeshli shivcha, I have a maidservant, she'en b'cholayim kula ki yafya, that there's no one more beautiful than her beauty. So somebody said, wow, look at this. Bo'i v'nasim zeh l'zeh, let's marry them off. V'nechlik b'vladis, and well, they'll split the children, they're going to be outrageously beautiful, and we'll be able to make a lot of money on this. So they put these two children of Shmuel ben Elisha, unbeknownst to them, who were their slaves, into one room. This one was sitting in one corner, and she was sitting in another corner. The son was saying, Ani koyin ben kahan gedoilim, I'm a koyin, the son of great kahanim. Esa shefcha, I'm going to marry a maidservant. And the daughter was saying, Ani kahanas bas kahanim gedoilim, I'm the daughter, the son of kahanim gedoilim. And Nasil Evid, I'm going to marry to a slave. Ubachu kalal ayla, and they cried the whole night. Kimin sha'ala marashacha, but once it was the break of dawn, hikirizeze, they recognized each other in the other end of the room. V'naflu ze'alzen, they fell one on the other, b'go b'vchia, and they broke out crying, hachiyatzin nishmasna, until their soul left them. V'alei and kain Yirmiyah, and it's regarding them that Yirmiyah laments, as it says in the pasuk, in Eicha, al eila ani b'chia, it's regarding them that I cry, eini eini yardamayim, my eye, sheds water as tears. Amr Shlakish, another travesty, another type of incident like this, in the times of the Churban, Shlakish says, Maisa b'isha achas. There was a story with a certain woman, v'tzafnas bas peniel shema, and her name was Tzafnas bas peniel. Now, he says the reason why she was called that was Tzafnas, shakol tzayfin b'yafi, because everyone would look and gaze at her beauty. Bas peniel, it means Bita Shel Kohen Gadol. She was the daughter of a Kohen Gadol. Shashimish Lefnai V'Lefnim Pnei El, which means Pnei, the face in front of Kael, in front of God. He was the one that went into the Kadshei Kadshim on Yom Kippurim. Shenis Alba Shaboi Kol Halayla. That her captors degraded her the entire night. Lamacher, the next morning, Hilbisha Shiva Chalukim. They clothed her with seven robes. V'Yitzil Lamacher, and they took her out to sell her. Now that they did what they wanted with her, they went out to sell her. Now there was a man that came along. He was the most ugly, ultimately ugly type of person. Amalai, he said to him, Harenyes Yafya, show me her beauty. I want to see what I'm investing in. Amalai said to him, Reka, empty one. If you want to take, take. Because there's no one as beautiful as this woman. So Amalai, he said to him, Afa Peking, even so. Hivshita Shishach Alakim. So they took off six of the outer robes. V'shvi kurasa, and the seventh one she tore off. V'nespal shaba eifa, and she rolled around in the dust. Amar lefanav, she said in front of Hashem, Ribbono shel olam, master of the world, imaleinu lochasta, if on us you don't have mercy, al kedusha shimcha hagod hagibur lama loitachas, but regarding your holy and mighty name, why don't you care that our name is being disgraced? Because of, in other words, where's your might that here you are, your children, your people, the Jewish people are being degraded so. And that v'leo koin in Yirmiyah, it's regarding her that Yirmiyah lamented, as it says in pasuk in Yirmiyah, Bas Ami, the daughter of my people, Chigri Sak, clothe yourself, wrap yourself with a sackcloth, v'spal shebe'ifah, and wrap and rolled around in the dust. Evil yochid asilach, an individual mourning you should make for yourself. Mispa tamrum, a bitter eulogy. Kipisim yoveh hashoydud aleinu, because suddenly the plunderer has come upon us. So the diuk is, the inference is, alech aleinem, it doesn't say on you, elo aleinu, on us, kiviyachal, so to speak, Hashem is saying, alaiva alecha bashoydud, on me and on you has come the plunderer. In other words, Hashem is saying, my name has also been desecrated when the Jewish people are being desecrated and being pillaged, as this story illustrates. Now the Gemara continues regarding the what ultimately caused the Churban Beis HaMikdash. So Amar Yehuda Amar Rav, he says, "My dechsev, what does it mean the pasuk in Micha that says va'ashku gever beisa, and that they oppressed a man and his house, v'ish v'nachlosa, and the man and his inheritance?" So the Gemara says there's a reference Ma'aseh Ba'Demechad. It was a story with a certain individual, shenosen einav be'eshes rabbi, that he desired, he was looking at his master's wife. Now v'shulya denagri hava. It wasn't his rabbi, his rebbe in Torah. Rather, it was his master regarding his profession, which was he was an apprentice by a carpenter. So he desired his master's wife. Now, pamachas hutzuch rabbi lulvis. One time it happened that his master needed to borrow some money. So amalei, so the apprentice said to him, shigar ishtucha etzli, valvena, send your wife to me, and I'll give her the money that to give to you. Shigar ishtucha etzli, so the master sent his wife to the apprentice. So she spent 3 days with the apprentice. Kadam. So then the carpenter got up and ubotzla, he came to the apprentice. Amalei said to him, Ishti shishikarti, look, my wife did I send to you, Heichani, where's my wife? So Amalei said to him, look, ani partati la'alta, I sent her away right away. I gave her the money and I sent her on her way. But v'shmati, I heard shatinoikisnis alu baderach, that there were some young men that fooled around with her on the road. So Amalei, so the carpenter said to his apprentice, Ma'asa, what should I do? Here she is, she's doing these inappropriate things. Amalei said to him, look, imata shemeil atzasi, if you listen to my advice, girsha, divorce her, be done with her. So Amalei said to him, but ksubasa meruba, she has a large ksuba, a large dowry. If I have to divorce her, it's going to cost me a lot. Amalei says, don't worry, ani alvacha, I'll lend you the money, but tell her ksubasa and give her a ksuba and be done with her. So amadzeve girsha. So the carpenter went and divorced his wife. Halachu v'nasa. The apprentice went and then married her. Now, kivin shegiyas manoi l'hayloi l'payer. Once the time came for the master, for his teacher to pay up his apprentice for the loan that he had given him to pay up his wife's ksuba, and he didn't have. So amaloi. So the apprentice said to his master, "Boy vaseimi b'chayvach. Now you work for me to pay up the debt that you owe me." V'hayu heim yeshvim ba'echel m'sheisim. Now they, this apprentice with this carpenter's old wife, were sitting and eating and drinking. Now he was working for them and serving them and giving them drink. And his tears were tearing out of his eyes. And he was falling into the cups that he was coming to pour them and give them to drink. The Gemara says it was at that moment that the decree of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash was sealed. And some say it was al shtei pesilas b'ner echad. It was because of the two wicks in the one glass of the candle, which is a reference to Eishes Ish. Because here you have this one woman who was really this man's wife, but was also with the apprentice, and that was the end that caused the Churban Beis HaMikdash. That concludes the dafim of Churban, of destruction, and now the Gemara continues quoting from our Mishnah, which was what led into this about Titus, which talks about the Churban Beis HaMikdash and the second time of the Beis HaMikdash, which was led by Titus, because that's a reference to the Halacha of Sikrukin, which we said that there was three different phases, and regarding the first two, there was no Sikrukin, but afterwards, then there was the Halacha of Sikrukin, which is even if somebody says, I'm going to kill you, and he says, no, saw Karaka, take my land, and just leave me alone, just don't kill me. That's where we have this Halacha of Sikrukin, which the Gemara quotes in the Mishnah, Lokach min ha-Sikrukin v'chulof. Let's say a Jew goes to buy from this Sikrukin, which forcibly took it from this Jew because otherwise he would have killed him, and then after buying it from this non-Jew he buys it from the homeowner, so the Mishnah said mekach batal. It's not a valid sale because this guy really didn't want to sell it to that non-Jew, and he could at later point really bring him to court, because at that point in time if anyone would kill a Jew he himself would be killed. So although he bought it subsequently from the homeowner, but since he went first to the Sikrukin and then to the homeowner, if he wouldn't acquiesce, then maybe the Sikrukin would come back to him, or maybe he's just said, yeah, I sold it to you because you're easier than me dealing with the Sikrukin. So therefore, it's not necessarily that he really wanted it, and it's going to be a mekach batel, and it goes back to the original owner. Now, Amar Rav, Rav qualifies, and he says that lo yishanu, we didn't learn this halacha of the Mishnah, that the sale is void, and that it goes back to the homeowner. El de Amar loy, it's only if the original owner said to this guy who purchased from the Sikrukin, leich chazek v'kani. You know what? You already bought from the Sikrukin, you want to buy from me? Go ahead, go make a chazaka, which is do certain things to the field, and acquire it. Now, since it was only done verbally, you could say that the reason why he said it was because, yeah, go ahead, buy it. I'd rather deal with you and get my field back from you than to deal with that non-Jew, that Sikrukin, who's a very difficult person. So you could say that he really didn't want to sell it. But, says Rav, al Bashtar, if he wrote it in his name as a document to this Jew, then Kana. Then the Jew has acquired it because he wouldn't have gone so far if not that he really desired and was willing to sell it to that Jew. So if he wrote a document, then there's no more halacha sekrukin, and then the mekach is not batal. But Shmuel Amhi argues in Rav. He says, no, af b'shtar namer lekana, even if he writes it as a document, that other purchaser who first purchased from the sekrukin and then from this original owner has not acquired it, ad sheyichtav l'achrayas, until the original owner writes that if anyone grabs the field from you, I'm taking responsibility, I will pay you back for this field that you're buying from me, then that's obvious that he's willing to really sell it, he's doing it wholeheartedly, then he can't claim to say that it's so, it's a krukin and it's a mekach batel, then it's going to be a valid sale. We'll continue on Talmud Beis, where the Gemara says, Tani kavaseh de Shmuel, we have a braisa that supports Shmuel's interpretation that it's only going to be a valid sale until he writes a document with a chrayis. Because as the braisa says, Reb Shimon ben Eloza Omer says, which this is the parallel halacha of buying from a sikrukin, and which is this non-Jew who forcibly took the field from the Jew, and he was going to kill him, and he says, no, take this land and leave me alone. And then he buys from the homeowner, is similar as the Mishnah parallels them to when a person buys from a husband and then from the wife, where then the wife would lose it for a ksuba, where again, she only says, I did it because I didn't want to disappoint my husband. Same thing as the sikrukin. So Bshimelaz says, if lakach min isha, if he first buys from the woman, v'chazav lakach min isha, and then he buys from the man, well then mekach kaim. But then, because you can't say you did it because your husband, because he didn't even go to the husband first, he first went to her. Min ish, v'chazav lakach min isha, but if he first went to the man, and then to the woman, then mekach batal, then it's going to be, the sale is going to be void, because again, she could say, I only did it because of the duress. Ah, chetichtav le'achrayas, until she writes to him, with achrayis, with responsibility, no, you're buying from me, I'm selling it to you. And if someone even comes to say it's not yours, I take responsibility, oh, then for sure she's willingly doing it, and she's not doing it only because of the husband. So we see like Shmuel's interpretation that it's not enough to write a document, it's that you did it with achrayis. So on that, the Gemara says, name it tavatuv to Rav, so not only is that supporting Shmuel, let's say that refutes Rav, on that, amalacha Rav would tell you no. My achrayis nami. What does the braisa mean when it says that until she writes it with responsibility, it means shtar, it means just writing in the document. It doesn't mean responsibility of my assets that if it gets taken from you, then I'm going to have to compensate you. It means until she writes it in the document, that's a responsibility because once you write in the document, you can't retract because verbally you could say, oh, what do you mean? Who said? I never said it. I never meant that. But if it's in the document, that's taking responsibility. That's what it means. But it doesn't mean the commonly called halacha of achrayis nechasim. It's not necessary. As long as you write in the shtar, that would already make it a mekach kaim. Now the Gemara continues, so that what we quoted up until now was from what's called the Mishnah Rishayna. The first version of this halacha of Sikrukin was that, no, you bought it from the non-Jew and then from the original owner. It's not a valid sale. You got to give it back to the original owner. Then a later Mishnah said, and as some of Farshim explained, because then people stopped buying it from the Sikrukin and then it would stay in non-Jewish hands. So the Mishnah Achrayna instituted that, no, it is a valid sale, but you have to give a quarter of that field's worth, as we'll see later on the Amid, how do you evaluate that quarter, to the original owner. So regarding this halacha of the one who buys from the Sikrukin could keep it, but has to give a quarter to the original owner, the Gemara brings the following braisa. Turn up on the braisa. Lakach min ha-Sikrukin. If someone purchases a field from a Sikrukin, again, a non-Jew who got it from a Jew that he was going to kill, who said, save me, just take my field. V'achla shalei shanim b'fnei bala. And he consumed the produce of the field for 3 years in front of the owner, which that's halacha that the beginning of Masechet Bava Basra talks about, which that's considered a chazaka. Moreover, is that the original owner can't claim after 3 years and say, oh, wait a second, this is my field. And I always owned this field. What are you doing on my field? And if you claim that you bought it, show me your shtar. He can't, because after 3 years, a person doesn't hold on to his document anymore. For 3 years, he does. And he had a chazaka that he was eating it, and the owner sold it for 3 years. So that's what's the halacha called of consuming produce for 3 years. So that's part of the case. Now, moreover, v'chazer machol acher. He then went, this guy who had purchased it from the sekukin and then eaten the produce for 3 years as the original owner looked on, then he went and he sold it to someone else. Says the Braisa, Ein labayil malakeach sheniklum. The original owner has no claims on the second purchaser for that quarter of the value of the field that any purchase of Sekukin has to give to the original owner. Meaning we don't know if that original purchaser from the Sekukin, again, as we said from Mishnah Achrayin, could hold on to it. But he has to compensate a quarter to the original owner. We don't know if he gave it or not. But we said if he ate it for 3 years and then he sold it to someone else, he can't come claim by the second guy who purchased it and say, wait a second, yeah, you could keep the field, but the revia, the quarter, has to be given to me. That's not the case. So the Gemara wanted to say, tell me, what is the case we're discussing? And that is, either katoin v'amar, if this second purchaser is coming and claiming to the original owner by saying, minach zavna, that first purchaser who had purchased it from the Sekrukin, he already purchased what he owes you from you, meaning he already gave you the quarter of the value of the field, as was instituted by the Mishnah Achrayna, as the courts had said, that he has to give it to the original owner, and he gave you that quarter. And then he ate for 3 years as a chazaka, he stayed on the field as it was his field, because it was. Now, therefore, you can't anymore tell anyone who's a purchaser of the field, show me your document, because again, as we mentioned before, more than 3 years, a person doesn't hold on to his documents of a field that he bought or that he sold. So if that's the case that we're discussing, so the Gemara wonders, then why did the Braisa say, specifically a case, that that first purchaser then went and sold it to someone else, afilu rishonami? Then even the first purchaser, that once he already ate the produce of the field that he had purchased from the Sekrukin for 3 years, if the original owner would come and claim and say, give me the quarter, but if that original purchaser would say that I already gave you the quarter, as the Chacham instituted, and I've been eating this produce for 3 years, so his claim would be believed. Because that's the halacha, that a person, or whatever dues he owes on the field, if he has it for 3 years, he doesn't have to hold on to documentation of that. So why say it specifically regarding a Lekeach Sheini, not by the original Lekeach Rishon? And Idoloikotoin, and so the Gemara says the other way around, and if the second purchaser is not coming with a claim, V'amma minach zavna, and saying that the first purchaser had already paid you that quarter, well, then afilu sheni namilai, then even the second purchaser should not be exempt, and he should be obligated to pay the quarter of the value that has to go to the original owner. So what's the understanding? Why is this halacha specifically by the Lekeach Sheini that he's exempt from this quarter that has to go to the original owner? So Amrav Sheshes, he explains. He says, lo'olam d'loy katoinle. Truth is, the case that we're discussing is that the second Lekeach doesn't come with a claim. He has no clue if the original owner paid up 3 years ago to the original owner that had the field taken away from him. But ukugoin zeh, like in such a case of Sekrukin that we're discussing, toyanin le'yairish, we claim, us the courts, make this claim for inheritors, but toyanin le'lekech, and we make the claim for a purchaser. In other words, regarding this case, when someone purchases a field from Sekrukin, and then he bequeaths it as inheritance to his sons, which the produce was eaten for 3 years, or like the case we're discussing over here, where he sells it to someone else and he had eaten on it for 3 years, and now the original owner comes to say, give it back to me, and the second purchaser says, I don't know to tell you if the first guy had paid you the quarter or not. Now, in such a case, that's what Rav Sheshet is explaining, that the courts make the claim for the Yairish and for the Lekeach. Now, which as Rashi explains, that even though there is an opinion in Masechta Baba Basra that says that we don't make claims for inheritors or for a purchaser where such a claim that, to say that the first guy had already bought it from you, where they don't know, so we make the claim for them. Although there is an opinion that says that we don't make that, here they would agree that we do make the claim. The reason being is because here we already assume that whoever purchases a field from a Sekrukin, and he knows, and he's not going to waste his money for nothing, that he has to appease the original owner and to pay him what he owes him. which in the, according to the Mishnah Achrona is a Revia. So that's why, says Rav Sheshes, even that man da'amu who says we usually are not taninan, here we would be taninan, and that's why the second lekeach, who has no clue, I don't know, did he pay Revia, and you're coming and you're claiming the Revia, the courts claim that, look, he already ate it for 3 years, we assume that he already took care of what he had to take care with you, because no, everyone knows Sikrukin is really throwing out your money if you don't take care of the original owner, so we assume he gave it to you, and we'll make the claim that it was already paid up. But ve'idach, but regarding the first lekeach, the reason why the Braisa didn't talk about him, because itoyin in, yes, if he would make the claim, of course we would believe him, because he already has a cheskes gimel shanim, which says that he took care of whatever debts he owed on this field, and he doesn't have to have documentation, but ve'itoyin loy. We're talking about where the claim was not made. If the claim wasn't made, then had he known that he paid up, he would make the claim, and if it wasn't paid up, that's why he's not making the claim. So, of course, we're not going to make the claim for him. So by the first lekeach, of course, he would have to give the revi if he's not making the claim. But by the second lekeach, where he doesn't know, then we are tanin and us, the courts, do it for him, and that's why he doesn't have to pay up the quarter. Now, relating to this halacha of Sikrukin, the Gemara says, Tanarban, we learn the braisa. Regarding a non-Jew, habom machmas chayv, that comes on to a Jew because of a debt that's owed to him, or umachmas amparis, or for just general theft, where he doesn't have the ability to kill the Jew, he's just forcing, the non-Jew is forcing the Jew to give him land, either again because he owes the non-Jew money, or just because the non-Jew just wants the Jewish person's land. So it says, the Braisa, ein boi mishum sikrukin. There's no halacha of sikrukin. What does it mean there's no halacha of sikrukin? So as Rashi explains, although our Mishnah said that regarding sikrukin, which is the unique halacha, which is when he's going to kill him and the Jewish person really wants him to take the field because then he knows he's going to save his life. Then that's the Mishnah said that if the Sikrukin has the field for 12 months already and the Jewish owner did not yet buy it back from him, did not come to court or claim it from him or whatever, then whoever purchases the field from the Sikrukin, he can hold on to it. He just has to give a quarter of the value to the original owner, again, as the Chacham were Masakan according to the Mishnah Achrayna. It's just that he has to give him back something, a quarter of that value. Now, the reason is because by Sikrukin, the courts later, the Jewish courts later evaluated and said the halacha is that since, again, as we said, by Sikrukin, the guy decides that, look, this guy's going to kill me. So, and as Rashi explains, even though the halacha of Sikrukin only started at a later point in time where whoever kills a Jew actually will be killed himself, but he's still afraid because he knows that they could still kill him, and from the first decrees by the War of Titus where they actually were killed if they don't kill Jews. So ultimately, the fact that after 12 months, he still didn't scream and complain and try to get his field back from the Jew, that proves that he has already given up and he actually acceded that willingly to the non-Jew. So that's why, again, as we said in the Mishnah, halacha by Sikrukin is that you can hold on to the field if you buy from the Sikrukin. You just got to give the original owner a quarter. Now, the reason for a quarter is because the Rabbanan valuated that a non-Jew who got it for free from the Jew, he sells to anyone who wants to buy from him a quarter below the original price because he got it for free. Now, but what the Braisa is saying over here is, but however, by this halacha, where the Jewish person didn't willingly give it to that non-Jew, and even though the non-Jew has already for 12 months, it's just because he didn't have the opportunity yet to coerce and to force to get the field back. But the sale that he's doing is not a valid sale, that this Jew is buying from this non-Jew, which non-Jew got the field because he demanded it because of a debt that's owed to him or because he just wanted to steal land from a Jew. There, the halach of Sikrukin, that after 12 months you could buy from the guy, from the non-Jew, and hold on to it just to give the original owner a quarter, does not apply over here. And here the halacha is, you would have to give it back to the owner. You have no rights to buy it from this non-Jew. Now the Braisa continues and says, v'amparis atzma, this halacha of amparis, which is when the non-Jew, the Jewish person is not afraid of being killed from this non-Jew. It's just he steals land from a Jew. Tzricha shetisha, there it has to be held on by the non-Jew for a period of shneim asa chedesh, for a period of 12 months. Because if not, then if it wasn't yet 12 months, then he would have to, whoever got it from that non-Jew would have to give it back to the owner, and then to get his money back, as we learn in the Mishnah, that if the original owner has the opportunity to buy it back up until 12 months, then he comes before any other person. So therefore, the Bryce is saying that the halacha of Ampuris would only apply if it was 12 months. Which the Gemara asks, wait a second, that's contradictory. Va'amr, you just said the line before, Eimba Mishrim Sikrukin. You said, there is no halacha of Sikrukin regarding Ampuris. In other words, the halacha of holding onto it for 12 months by the non-Jew was only mentioned by Sikrukin. As we said in the Mishnah, by Sikrukin, if he holds onto it for 12 months, so up until 12 months, no one's allowed to buy it. The original owner comes first. After 12 months, then you could buy it and give a quarter to the original owner. Whereas by Amparis, you said, there's no halacha of Sikrukin, and that even after 12 months, even if you buy it then from the guy, you have to give it back without money. You have to give it straight back to the owner because he never gave it to the non-Jew. He's going to get his field back. Who are you paying that non-Jew and then demanding even to get your money back from the Jewish owner? And then how is it in the next sentence the Bryce is saying that, oh, for the halacha of Amparis to apply, you need to have 12 months. What 12 months? That's only halacha by Sikrukin. So the Gemara says, you're right. Now, hachi kama. The way you have to read the Bryce is that it's like it said in the Bryce, it says, Amparis imbe mishum Sikrukin. You're right. Regarding Amparis, there's no halacha of Sikrukin, because whereas by Sikrukin, that there the one who purchased it could hold on to the field that he purchased from the non-Jew, and he only has to give a quarter to the original owner. But by Amparis, you're right. Even without money, he doesn't get compensated because who are you? You shouldn't have bought it from the non-Jew. It wasn't his. And you got to always give it back to the original owner. Now, what the Bryce was qualifying at the end was actually going back not on Amparis, but on Sikrukin. Sikrukin Atzma, regarding Sikrukin itself, which we said, that then the one who purchased it could hold on to it, that is Tzricha Shatish Yud Beis Chaydish. That has to be only if the Sikrukin already had it for 12 months. And the original owner didn't say anything and didn't try to get it back, then we say, oh, for sure he gave it wholeheartedly and he's obviously not coming to buy it back. Then another Jew could buy it and then give the original owner a quarter of that pricing. Now, Amar Rav Yosef, says, Naktinon in Amparis b'Bavel. We have a tradition that there's no Amparis in Bavel. Now, as Rashi explains, the simple translation of Rav Yosef's statement sounds like he's saying that the non-Jews do not forcibly steal land from Jews in Bavel, which is what Amparis means. Hence, the ramification that sounds like what Rav Yosef is saying is that if a Jew comes and contests on his friend by saying that this field that you purchased from that non-Jew is really my field, it's just that non-Jew stole it from me, it sounds like from Rav Yosef's halacha that he's not believed because there is no Amparis. Non-Jews don't do that in Bavel. They don't do Amparis. They don't just steal fields from Jews. Now that the Gemara asked, but we see that is. We see that in Bavel that non-Jews do steal fields from Jews. So what's Rav Yosef saying? Elaim would rather say what he was saying was ein din Amparis b'Bavel. The halacha of Amparis does not apply in Bavel, which we said that by Amparis, if someone purchases land from someone that just stole, not a case of Sikrukin where the Jew's life was in danger. He just stole a field from a Jew. There we said that whoever purchases the land from the non-Jew lost his money because who are you buying it? You got to give it back to the Jewish owner. So that does not apply in Bavel to create a loss for the purchaser of that land that he has to then lose his money and give the field back to the original owner. So on that, the Gemara asks my time, what's the reason? So that, the Gemara explains why Bavel is different as Kivin de Ikka Beidaver. Since there's a courthouse to contend with these type of litigation, Veloy Ozel Kavel, and the original owner did not go ahead and make his claim to complain about this non-Jew, quote, that stole it from him, Ema Achule Achel. So therefore we say, and we consider that he already forgave that guy. And therefore, he forgave him, and therefore it's not considered his, and therefore the Jew who buys it from that non-Jew has done a valid purchase. And that's why there's no Andin Amparis in Bavel. Of course, they do steal, but if you don't go out and complain, which you could because it's a courthouse, must be you already Michael, and that's why a Jew who buys from him has purchased it a valid, and therefore gets to keep it, and he doesn't have to, as in general Amparis, give it back to the original owner and lose his money. Now the Gemara continues with a story related to this halacha that introduces this concept of the halacha of Sikrukin. So the Gemara tells us that Gidol Bari Eloi, which was his name, Kambil Ara Betaska, he received a piece of land from the community, which for the purposes of paying the land tax, Memne Baga, from the people of the valley, which as Rashi explains, their custom was that there would be taxes placed on the entire immediate neighborhood of the valley to give this amount of taxes to the king. And they would then, the people of the community, would then apportion it amongst the people who had fields over there, and each one would give taxes according to the portion of the lands that he got to work. Now, they would then give all the tax to one person, and he would then give that amount of money to the tax collector. Now, if one of the people of the fields would leave, the tax collector would still demand the same amount of taxes from the people of that valley. So therefore, the story that we're talking about over here is that the owner of one of the lands, he left and he went somewhere else. So the people of the valley went, who they had the obligation now to still pay up the same amount of taxes as they always did. They gave that person's land to Gidel, that he should work the land and then pay the certain amount of the taxes, which this guy always fit that bill, and then he could go out and consume the rest of the field's produce for himself. So the Gemara tells us that Akdim v'yohai b'zuzi, so what Gidel was very industrious, and he went and he was deciding he's going to pay up the money to the king for the taxes, the tlashnin. He paid up already 3 years worth of taxes beforehand. He knows he took care of his expenses, and then everything else is profit. Now, the problem is, l'seif osa marvasa kamoi. Problem is that at the end, the original owner came after the first year. So, Amrlei, they said to Gidel, shasa kamaisa dihavis achlas. Okay, the first year that you gave the taxes for, you go ahead and you eat it, you consume the produce, because that's what you had already, and you had to pay up that year's taxes. Now, hashta, but now that we're back here, in time for the second year, ananya vina nananachlina, will pay up the second year's taxes, and will consume the produce. You don't have it, you're out of the picture. Now, Osla kamei d'Rav Papa, they came in front of d'Rav Papa to decide on this halachic question, because on the one hand, he already paid up 3 years of taxes. On the other hand, once the original owners come back, they can't even use the taxes, because once there's a change of ownership, that new owners would have to pay taxes again. So his paying for the next 2 years would only work if he stayed there. But since they're back, they want to kick him out. But he already spent two more years of taxes. So Sava lemechtev leitirfa, Rav Papa thought that he could write a document from the courts, which is from the word tarif, that a collection document for that Gidel, abnei bagaf, on the people of that valley, that he could collect from the produce of their lands, whatever it is that he paid for the taxes of the next 2 years. Now, the reason being is because had those owners not came to go ahead and take away the land that Gidel had gotten, he wouldn't have lost anything, because he would have then worked it for the next 2 years, and the taxes he paid would have been already valid. But the problem is, now that other people, those original owners, are going to go ahead and consume and work the land these next 2 years, the king is going to take taxes for them too, and that's not going to work. He's not going to count the taxes that Gidel worked towards that. And turns out that Gidel's losing 2 years worth of taxes that he paid for the people of the valley. Now, Amalei Rav Huna Bereid Rav Yishuv Papa, but Rav Huna, the son of Rishu, said to Rav Papa, Im Kain, if that's the case that you want to go ahead and have Gidel be able to collect for the 2 years of taxes that he already prepaid, Asisa, then you have made this situation like the halacha of Sikrukin, which, again, as we explained by the Mishnah Achreina, tells us that the one who buys from Sikrukin doesn't lose anything. Because, as we said, that he purchases the land from the non-Jew, and he only has to give it to the original owner whatever that he had saved from the decrease in the pricing that the non-Jew sells him a quarter less than the going rate. So that a quarter is what he pays to the original owner. So he's not losing anything. Or if, let's say, the original owner has money to buy the land that he forced, that under duress gave to that non-Jew, so then the Jewish owner would have to give it back to that Jewish purchaser. So he doesn't lose anything. So therefore, is what Rav Huna Bereid Rav Yishuv is telling Rav Papa, in this situation of Gidel, where you don't want Gidel to lose anything what he gave to the tax collections, and that he could collect whatever he gave, you're making him like Sikrukin. Now the problem with that is that this is not a situation of Sikrukin, because the king doesn't have any rights for the future year's taxes. He only has the tax of that year. Now, it was for that obligation that it was sold to Gidel. He shouldn't have gone ahead and prepaid 3 years. That's his own problem. It's not like Sikrukin, where he should be compensated for whatever it is that he had done to pay a non-Jewish a debt that's owed by another Jew. Rather, he says that the halacha is actually hiniach ma'isa b'karen hatzvi, which is a term that's used that he put his money on the horn of a deer. A deer is a very fast animal. You put an animal on the horn of a deer, you basically lost your money because the deer is going to run away. Same thing over here. You shouldn't have put your money for the next 2 years of taxes, which didn't come yet, and the fact that you did, you thought you're going to have the field, but you didn't. It's your loss, and it's not like the halacha of Sikrukin, and he does not get compensated for those 2 years. He doesn't get a shtar tirfa. Now the Gemara continues quoting from our Mishnah that said, Zu Mishnah Rishayin, as we mentioned before, there was the original phase of Sikrukin, which the first version said that, look, if you buy from the Sikrukin and then from the Jewish owner, he's going to say, look, it's just easier for me to deal with you. That's why I said I'm going to sell it to you, because I don't want to deal with the Sikrukin, or I felt pressured. If I'm not going to buy from you, then the sukkah is not going to come back to me. So therefore, the sale is void. And even though you paid it to the non-Jew, you lost that money. You have to give it back to the original owner. Now, Bezin Shalach Arayin Omer, but the later court said, Halakech min HaSikroken, know that someone purchased from the Sikroken, Nislam Labayil Revia. He could hold on to the field. He just has to give the original owner a quarter of the value that he saved in the purchasing from the non-Jew. So we have Machlekes actually how to qualify and quantify this Revia, this quarter that he has to give to the original owner. Amar Rav, he says, Revia Bakarka, as Rashi will explain, what does that mean? A quarter of the value of the field, or Revia Bamois, or a quarter in monies. Which monies? In other words, either he gives to the original owner a quarter of the monies that he gave to the non-Jew in the purchasing price, or he gives from the land that he bought what's worth a quarter of that monies. In other words, let's say he purchased from the non-Jew, from the Sikroken, in the price of a mana. So he gives to the original owner a quarter of a mana, or from the land itself, he gives a quarter of a mana, which actually is only a fifth of the value of the land. In other words, if let's say the original owner, who he gets the choice, Tziyad de Alal Yoyna, if let's say he wants to be paid that quarter in land, so you give a quarter of, not of the land itself, but you're actually only giving him a fifth of the land, you're giving him a quarter of the price of the land, which was a quarter less than how much the land, it was actually a fifth less. That's the opinion of Rav, as Gemara will shortly explain. He holds that a non-Jew sells it a fifth less than the price. So if let's say you have something that's really worth five, the non-Jew sells it for four. So therefore, this purchaser gives to the original owner a quarter of a mana, or a fifth of the land, which is a quarter of a mana, which is because the land that he purchased from the Sikruken for a mana is really worth five quarters, meaning one quarter more. That's the opinion of Rav. Shmuel Amar, he disagrees. He says, Revia Bakarka, which although it sounds like the same terminology as Rav, but it's actually different, a quarter of the land, Shehen Shlish B'mois, which is a third of the money. Meaning if let's say it was sold for a mana, he gives a third of the mana, which is more than the opinion of Rav, to the original owner. Now the reason being is because Shmuel holds that a non-Jew sells it not just for a fifth of the price less, but a quarter of the price less. So for example, let's say something that's worth four, he sells for three. Therefore, this field which he purchased for a mana, you have to give four-thirds. Meaning if let's say you bought it for three-thirds, which is what a mana is, a third more than that, which would be another third, which is a third of the money, which again is a quarter of the original value of the field, is what you have to give to the original owners. Again, although Rav and Shmuel both use the term Revia Bekarka, according to Rav, Revia Bekarka means to say, if you want to pay in land, you pay a quarter of the monies that you purchased in land. Whereas according to Shmuel, Revia Bekarka actually means a quarter of the land itself, because it's actually there. What we're talking about is not how much he sold it for, but actually how much the value of the land itself, because Shmuel holds that he gives you a quarter less, and it's that quarter that you have to compensate the original owner. As the Gemara explains, Maika Miflugi, what are they arguing about? So Mar Sava, because Shmuel holds, Nechi Revia Zavin, the non-Jewish Sekrukin sells it for a quarter less of the price. Umar Sava, Nechi Chomisha Zavin, but Rav holds no, that he sells it for a fifth less. So again, you're giving a fifth of the karka, which is a quarter of the monies that was given to the non-Jew. That's what you give back to the original owner, whereas Shmuel holds that, no, you're giving a third of the monies, which is, again, a quarter of the land itself. Now, Mesa, the Gemara asks him the following braisa on Shmuel, which is very similar to the Tar Mishnah, that says, Zu Mishnah Rishayna, the beginning of the braisa, which says, which is the halach of the Mishnah Rishayna, as we said, that the sale is void. That was according to the first version of the Takanas Bezin regarding Sikruken. But Bezin Shalach Arayin Amar, but a later court said, Halakech min HaSikruken, if someone purchases from this Sikruken, Nisim L'Bayim Revi, you only have to give the original owner a quarter. V'yad Bayim El Yonin, like we mentioned this idea just before, that but the original owners, they have the upper hand, they could decide how they want to be compensated for that quarter. Ratzu B'Karka Noitlin, if they want, they could take it from the land itself. Or Ratzu B'Mois Noitlin, if they want to, they could decide that they want to be paid with money. Now that says, the Braisa, Amos said, when did we say this? Bizman She'im B'Yadun Likach. This that a different Jew could purchase from the Sikruk and hold on to it and just give a quarter is only if the original owners don't have money to buy it themselves. But if they do have monies, then they come before anyone else. They have the rights to get it back and no other Jew could have it. Now, Rabbi Hashem Bezdin, but Rabbi, he sat and made a court and they decided Shimshas Befnei Sikurkin, Shnei Masa Chaydish, if the Sikurkin was already holding onto it for 12 months and the original owner did not yet take it back, then Kol HaKodim Likach Zachah. Then whoever wants to, whoever gets there first, merits and to buy it from the Sikurkin. Aval, but again, as we said before, Nisan Labayilim, he has to give it to the original owners, Revia Bakarka, which again, that term could be interpreted, a quarter of the land. Oy, but this term cannot be, seemingly, Revia B'mo'is, to give it a quarter of the monies. Now that sounds like Rav and not like Shmuel, because according to Shmuel, you're not really giving a quarter of the money, you're giving a third of the monies. So seemingly the Braisa contradicts Shmuel. And I think more answer, Rav Ashi says no. Ki Tanya Hahi, when did the Braisa say that he gives the original owners a quarter of the money? It means a quarter la'acha sheba'u mois. That's only after the third of the monies, which is the opinion of Shmuel, comes liyadi, comes to the hands of the original owners. So it's actually just like Shmuel. In other words, this that the Braisa is calling it a quarter of the monies, it actually means to say he gave three-thirds to, meaning the price tag that the non-Jew was asking for him, and that's what he gave. Now, a third of that monies is actually a quarter of the total. In other words, what the Braisa is saying is that you give the original owners a quarter of the land or of monies. In other words, this amount, it will be a quarter when it combines with what he gave to the non-Jew together with what he's giving to the original owner. Then, from the total amount, will be that the owner will be a quarter of the total. And that's really a third of the price that he pays to the non-Jew, which is exactly like the interpretation of Shmuel. So although it's calling it Revi B'mois, it means after everything, then that's a quarter. Because now we're going to split up into four parts, where you have four threes, so then you have those, that's a Revi. But really, it's taking a third of what he paid to the non-Jew. That's a quarter of how Shmuel interprets the halacha of Revi'a is really a shlish b'mois, and although it says Revi'a b'mois, is in, at the end of it. So there was not a difficult in Shmuel, and that's Machlokes Rav and Shmuel. How are we qualifying this halacha of Revi'a? Is Revi'a of the is it of the monies that he paid to the non-Jew, or is it from the value of the land itself? In other words, when he decreases the price, is he decreasing it a fifth, or is he only decreasing it a quarter? Which again, that explains the machlek is Rav and Shmuel, and that is a fifth of the value of the land itself is going to be a quarter of the price that the non-Jew had asked from the Jew, which that's the opinion of Rav. And whereas the opinion of Shmuel is that a quarter of the total value of the land is going to be a third of the price that he paid to the non-Jew. And again, that's how we're explaining Revi'a B'mois, which is in the total value of the field itself, which is when he finishes paying to the Jewish owner, that's going to be a third of the price that he paid to the non-Jew.